The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday. Already, we've got some technical problems right off the top. For whatever reason, we're not on Facebook or Twitch today. Hopefully, the regular Facebook and Twitch users. Oh, and I guess that means Twitter as well. Ah, shit. We'll find us over here. So on YouTube or on one of the audio streams, like on Progressive Voices or at NicoleSandler.com on the Listen Live page. Yeah, it is what it is. You know, it's just another day in the life of me. You know, I was bemoaning the fact on as I was writing up the description of today's show that we really could use George Carlin right around now. Because things are crazy. We've got this election going on. And by the way, last night was a pretty good day for progressives. Let's hear it for the progressives. John Fetterman, Summer Lee, of course, I wasn't planning to do this right now, so I don't have the names in front of me. But, what's her name? Out in where is she? In Washington State? Or, no, it wasn't Washington. In Oregon. Duh. Oregon voted yesterday, not Washington. What is her name? Jamie McLeod Skinner. She gets the big applause of the day. In fact, she does deserve a round. There you go. Jamie McLeod Skinner. Shouldn't matter, but a gay woman out in Oregon. Successfully primaried the man who is known to many as the Joe Manchin of the House. His name is Kurt Schrader. He's been in Congress from the 5th District of Oregon for, I don't know how many years, too many years, frankly. And here's what's really depressing about this. Kurt Schrader, again, the descriptor of him as the Joe Manchin of the House is kind of accurate. Schrader cast a key vote to block Democrats' drug pricing legislation to bring the price of drugs down. And then he voted to block it, and then he worked to water the measure down before playing a pivotal role in helping the Republicans kill the Build Back Better. Kurt Schrader has been an obstructionist, but guess who endorsed him in this go around? I don't know for sure that Nancy Pelosi did, but I'm guessing she did because she endorses all incumbents, whether they deserve it or not. For instance, she went down to Texas to not only endorse, but to campaign for Henry Cuellar. He is the anti-choice member of the House. He wears his religion, I guess, on his sleeve and votes against my right, your right to choose what we do with our bodies. The problem there, right? Well, Kurt Schrader, again, he helped the Republicans kill Build Back Better. He blocked the drug pricing legislation that the Democrats ran on and promised. And yet, Joe Biden endorsed him. And instead, at the time, when it mattered most, Kurt has been there for me.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. That's why we can't have nice things. That's why we lose. And to make matters more embarrassing for Mr. Schrader, he was a super PAC bankrolled by, guess who? Big Pharma. Go figure. He helped tank the Democrats' promise to help us negotiate for drug prices. So Big Pharma spent $1.1 million to boost his candidacy in this primary race. Over $1 million in one primary race in a district in Oregon? It's unheard of, or it was before this cycle. Kurt Schrader also benefited from $800,000 in spending by one of a pro-Israel super PAC called Mainstream Democrats PAC. These are the people who backed Kurt Schrader. Well, it doesn't matter because he lost. He was defeated in the primary by a woman, by a lesbian. Ha! and she's much more than that. Jamie McLeod Skinner handily defeated him. In fact, somebody's calling me and that's not okay now. Anyway, yeah, radio is my ringtone in case you're wondering where that came from. She won by a fairly large margin. I thought I had the decision desk headquarter tally up here. And I closed it by mistake. But if I recall correctly, she was with only about 61% of the vote counted. I don't know where the rest of the votes are. She's beating him 61-39%. So that's a pretty definitive statement there. Hey, Kurt Schrader, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. While we're in Oregon, let me tell you this story, because that was Oregon's 5th congressional district. Well, next door in the 6th district, you heard a lot about this race because this was infuriating because there was a crypto billionaire. Do I have his name written here? Maybe I don't. Anyway, this crypto billionaire decided he was going to buy the election, and his Protect Our Future PAC, I think was his. Was that right? The Protect Our Future PAC. And get this, another one who supported this guy who was unqualified, a guy named Carrick Flynn. So that I'm trying to paraphrase it. Despite the Protect Our Future PAC and the House Majority PAC, which is a group led by Hillary Clinton's former campaign manager, Robbie Mook, those two groups, these super PACs, spent a combined $13 million in one primary race in Oregon to put this guy, Carrick Flynn, into office. Well, guess what? Even $13 million, an unheard of amount when it comes to a congressional primary race, couldn't do the trick. $13 million and State Representative Andrea Salinas is winning. In this case, 77% of the votes are counted, and the margin is even bigger, 38-19%. So maybe, just maybe, we're saying, you know what? Despite Citizens United and all your dirty tricks, your true colors will bring you down. For instance, in North Carolina, Madison Cawthorn, poor baby, he also was defeated in his primary by a state senator, Chuck Edwards. So thank God. Look, it's one less battle. I hope a Democrat can beat Chuck Edwards. But you know what? Getting Madison Cawthorn out of there is worth it, whatever it takes. He won't be back. So at least we got that. But when I say, I would love to hear George Carlin opining on that. I would love to hear George Carlin talking about this election cycle, about the last election cycle. Can you imagine George Carlin on the former guy in office? Just because he had a way of observing the human condition. Right? That's what a great comedian does. They just have a unique perspective on the human tragedy. In many cases, that's what life is, right? It's a tragedy. And George Carlin just had a way of looking at things that we never thought of, but it makes so much sense, right? And he called it like he saw it. So Today, I'm trying to figure out where this hearing was. There was a hearing in the House. Oh, it was the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on abortion access. That's kind of timely and topical. And you may recall, my friend Sue is trying to call me, and she doesn't realize I'm on the air right now. Anyway, the House held these hearings on abortion access, and there was some just heart-stopping and mind-blowing testimony. I'm going to share a few clips with you because this will provide the perfect counterpart or counterbalance, perhaps, to... hold on one second. I just need to answer the phone. Sue, I can't talk now. I'm on the air, but I'll call you back when I'm off, okay? Okay, bye. Bye. That's an old friend of mine. So anyway, she called 20 times, so I just need to tell her. All right, so they're having this this hearing, and all right, I'm just going to share with you a few of the clips. Thankfully, as shared with us by Aaron Rupar on the Twitters, because he's really good at his job. So this is Thomas Massey, congressman from Kentucky. What do you want to say about to those people who get abortions, congressman?
It's an unplanned thing that's happened, and now they're trying to treat it like an emergency when it should be the birth of a baby.
What?
Those who would prematurely end the life of their baby are being called patients.
They are.
And my body, my choice.
Yeah.
I remember when I was young and before I learned, you know, how babies came about. I thought when they said my body, my choice, they were talking about, you know, whatever was inside of the woman was part of their body.
It is.
The baby is not the body
Bullshit.
Of the woman that it's inside
Wanna
of.
Want to bet?
It's another life. It's not
the parasite
body of the woman.
It is the parasite. You know, I got in trouble once for saying that. If a being depends on the host body for its nourishment, for its very life force, and can't live without that host body, then it is a parasite. Now, I said that one day years ago when I was guest hosting the Randy Rhoads Show when she was on Premier Radio, and hoo boy, some of the Randy's listeners didn't appreciate it. Well, too bad. I say what I feel. Until a fetus can live outside of the mother's womb on its own, it is part of the host's body. It depends on that body for its nourishment, for its survival. Cannot live without being attached, then it is part of that woman's body. Period. End of statement. But you're going to love this one. So in this case, there's this cretin who, with the name of Chip Roy, from Texas. Of course he is, right? Just figures he's from Texas. And Chip Roy is questioning let me just do it this way. It'll be easier. Chip Roy is questioning some adoption providers, doctors. Go figure. Okay, show how heinous you can be, Congressman.
In light of that, and in light of Texas being an inhospitable place, according to your testimony, are you aware of how many people have moved to the state of Texas in the last decade? Do you know what that number is?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I will say that the clinics that you're referring to are fake
4 million.
And they don't actually provide
4 million people have moved to the state of Texas in the last decade.
Can it get any ruder?
That's the population of the entire state of Alabama have moved to the state of Texas by choice in the last decade. I would move to one other question here. Ms. Robinson. I didn't ask you a question about that.
Oh,
Ms. Robinson.
Ms. Robinson.
I'll ask you a question. When is the latest that you have performed an abortion in terms of weeks of the unborn child?
Oh, my God.
Yes, my name is Dr. Robinson.
Yo!
And I
it
provide
is
abortion
Dr. Robinson
in Alabama.
To you.
So Alabama has...
What is the answer to the question? The latest that you have performed an
God.
Abortion.
I'm going to answer your question. So unfortunately, state is one of those states that passed restrictions or bans on abortion care, which limits physicians like myself.
And therefore, in other words, you'd like to do it later. What is the latest you have performed an abortion?
So since I will always follow the law and I live in the state of Alabama, I provide abortion care up until 20 weeks gestational age.
Okay, so you performed an abortion at 20 weeks.
Yes, sir.
The procedure for an abortion, when we're talking about at 20 weeks, as I understand it, is dilation and extraction. Have you performed abortions at that stage? And in doing so, have you had baby parts that you've had discard or store in some capacity?
One of the things that you all have done
throughout this
hearing is just use inflammatory language.
It's a question. Ma'am, it's a simple question.
No, it isn't.
Have you had human parts, arms, legs, as a result of an abortion performed at the time you just acknowledged you performed abortions?
I am a physician and a proud abortion provider.
Yes.
There's nothing that you can say
makes
it difficult to talk about the care that I provide.
Right. So have there been baby parts yet?
Oh, my God. So that's the end of that clip. I'm offended for her. Dr. Robinson, not Ms. Robinson, Dr. Robinson is her name. But hold on, because Aaron gave us the other clip.
There's nothing that you can say. Makes it difficult to talk about the care that I provide.
Right.
To
so have there been baby parts? Yes or no?
If you would like for me to talk.
And
to
where
you
have
about
where and how have they been stored?
An abortion for patients who need care.
So the answer to the question is fairly obvious.
Gestational age, I'm happy
that there are baby parts, and you don't want to talk about how they're being stored.
You don't
want to talk about putting them in freezers. You don't want to talk about putting them in Pyrex dishes. You want to talk about the videos that we have from Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast in Houston, Texas. You don't want to talk about the reality.
The gentleman.
Do
you mind me answering? All of those things that you just mentioned, I have never seen that in a healthcare setting ever.
Never.
We don't put baby parts in freezers or Pyrex dishes. I've never seen a patient.
Okay. Well, I asked where you put them.
Stop by and decide she wants to tell me.
Well, then where do they go?
Oh God! Oh my God!
Has expired.
Okay, first of all, stop calling them gentlemen. That man is not a gentleman. There is nothing gentle or manly about him. Can we agree on that? This is just now. David N. in the chat room says, "When is this guy's term up?" Every member of Congress is up every 2 years. The Senate, they have 6-year terms, and a third of them are up for election every 2 years. So it's staggered. The House, every member is up every 2 years. Chip Roy can and should be voted out of office. How sickening is that? I'm going to play you one more clip. Thankfully, this one doesn't involve any of these Republican Neanderthal pieces of shit. Instead, testifying here is a member of Congress herself. It's Congresswoman Lucy McBath of Georgia. You might recall Lucy McBath got into Congress because her son Jordan, and I hate that I'm drawing a blank on his last name. Her son Jordan was killed by some old fucking white guy in front of a convenience store in Jacksonville, Florida, because the guy got out of his car to go into the convenience store and Jordan, Lucy McBath's son, was in another car in the parking lot, and the white murderer didn't like that loud music was coming out of Jordan's car. So he shot and killed him. That's why Lucy McBath got into Congress. That's why she ran. So that's who she is. And I want you to remember that as you listen to this horrible story that she's about to tell us.
Looked, asking how far along I was and saying that they were so excited for me and my future with my child. For 2 weeks, I carried a lost pregnancy and the torment that comes with it.
Wow.
I never went into labor on my own. When my doctor finally induced me, I faced the pain of labor without hope for a living child.
Okay, do you get what's going on here? She was pregnant. She suffered a miscarriage, and the stillborn, or wasn't born, the dead fetus remained in her body, and they wouldn't do a DNC to remove it. So she had to give birth to it? To a dead fetus? Can you imagine? That's cruel.
This is my story. It's uniquely my story. And yet, it's not so unique. Millions of women in America, women in this room, women at your homes, and women you love and cherish have suffered a miscarriage.
Yep.
And so I ask, on behalf of these women, after which failed pregnancy should I have been imprisoned?
Yeah.
Would it have been after the first miscarriage?
Mm.
After doctors used what would be an illegal drug to abort the lost fetus? Would you have put me in jail after the second miscarriage? Perhaps that would have been the time.
Mm.
Forced to reflect in confinement at the guilt I felt. The guilt that so many women feel after losing their pregnancies. Or would you have put me behind bars after my stillbirth?
Ugh, God.
After I was forced to carry a dead fetus for weeks, after asking God if I was ever going to be able to raise a child. And I asked because the same medicine used to treat my failed pregnancies is the same medicine states like Texas would make illegal.
Mm.
I ask because if Alabama makes abortion murder, does it make miscarriage manslaughter? I ask because I want to know if the next woman who has a miscarriage at 3 months, if she will be forced to carry her dead fetus to term.
Okay, so you get what this is about, right? This is horrific. And the way that these Republicans are talking to these women is sick. It's cruel. It's sick. It's beyond insanity. Now, let me read to you something Elon Musk said today. I normally don't quote Elon Musk because, I'm sorry, the amount of money somebody has has no correlation to their worth as a human being. And he's just a massive piece of shit. So today, I guess he was interviewed somewhere and he talked, I was always a Democrat. I don't think I ever voted Republican, but I can't bring myself to vote Republican anymore. And he was called on what he said. So he had to qualify it because he was called out on it. And so he tweeted out, by the way, his purchase of Twitter is on hold. Good. Anyway, here's what he tweeted. In the past, I voted Democrat because they were mostly the kindness party. But they have become the party of division and hate. So I can no longer support them and will vote Republican. Now watch their dirty tricks campaign against me unfold. And puts a picture of a popcorn emoji. The Democrats have become the party of division and hate? Did you hear the words of those Republicans? And I'm calling them that because it's the biggest insult I can find. See, we've heard George Carlin on abortion. We haven't heard George Carlin on the cruelty of today's Republican Party. On the, you know, one of them I had to block today, who said something about he was mimicking Putin's lies about, you know, the Ukrainians are the Nazis we're fighting. It's opposite world, right? But it's worse. It's opposite world with the ugliest of intentions. They're the cruel and divisive and the people with the bad intentions. Ugh. You know what? I would love to hear George Carlin go off on this because in his later years, he was always funny, right? He was always funny, but he was more of a commentator on the human condition than anything else. All right. So with that, I think it's time to talk to Kelly Carlin. Now, we taped this, I think I told you last week, because I wanted to hold it because the HBO documentary, it premieres part one Friday night, part two Saturday night. So this is a week old, but it's okay because you wouldn't know that. Or I might ask Kelly Carlin about these latest events. Hopefully this will work. If not, I have another way to play it for you. All right, let's try it. With no further ado, Kelly Carlin on the Nicole Sandler Show. Fingers crossed.
I'm always happy to be able to talk to Kelly Carlin. She's just a brilliant woman who's got so much going on. But today, we are not talking about training or mindfulness or things that we usually do talk about. Today, we actually get to talk about George, Kelly's father, the one and only amazing George Carlin. Kelly, welcome to the show and congratulations on this project. Tell us about it.
Thank you, Nicole. Always wonderful to be here. Yeah, this project, super duper excited about it. I have been wanting to do a documentary for about 5 years, and we had a bunch of other things going on and never the right people, the right situation quite clicked. And then about 4 years ago, I was approached by a big producer in the UK, a guy named Teddy Leifer, and he had just produced and won the Oscar for a documentary called Icarus.
Okay.
And I was like, and I watched it, and I'm a big cycling fan. So I was like, wow, this is a great documentary. And I was like, I was impressed with this person. And he and I had a bunch of conversations, just an amazing human being, smart man. And finally, the timing was right. And so early 2020, January 2020, we started looking for directors and talked to a lot of amazing filmmakers, some of them my heroes. And then we also talked to another person who I love and adore, Judd Apatow. And
yes.
It was like, huh, he ticked every box. He ticked the storyteller, the high EQ, the fact that he's a comedian, the fact that he's interviewed comedians, the fact that he was best friends with one of my dear friends, Gary Shandling, and he did an incredible documentary on Gary.
Oh, that's right. We saw that. That was very good. It was very different.
And, and the thing about that, what he did with that doc was he really revealed Gary, like the true Gary that those of us who know Gary know. And I thought, this is the guy. This is the guy who's interested in what makes people tick, in letting people really be themselves. And so we jumped in with him, and it's been a lovely, incredibly lovely experience, the whole thing.
Oh, good. So you are an executive producer on this project. This is partly your baby. You were there for the whole thing.
Yes. Yeah. I'm an executive producer with also Jerry Hamza, who is my dad's manager, who's my partner in all things with my father.
Uh-huh.
And, and then we have some other producers and Teddy and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And you're interviewed. Is it okay? I've got the trailer here. Is it okay if I play that?
Sure.
All right. So everyone can see what this program is. It premieres on HBO this Friday night, May 20th. It's a two-parter, yes?
Yes. Yes. So each part is each night, Friday night and then Saturday night.
Oh, cool. Okay. So we got the weekend planned. All right. So here is the trailer for George Carlin. And George Carlin's American Dream.
George Carlin.
Hey, baby, what's that?
We got assholes, scumbags, jerk-offs, and dipshits. And they all vote.
He was funny. He was smart. He was opinionated.
I wanted to be just like him.
He was just so cool.
Here's the list of words you can't say all the time.
Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits.
And the crowd goes crazy.
Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits.
They arrested me for profanity.
The Supreme Court restricts the broadcast of dirty words.
I'm going to jump to it right now. He's the Beatles of comedy.
I began this dream of standing in front of people and having their attention.
My mother was his biggest champion. She just had a way of lifting people up and believing in them. They were comrades in arms. But then what happened was superstardom. My mom was alone all the time. She's feeling left behind. And now the drugs are there. And that really did undermine everything in our family.
I did as much cocaine as there was in the immediate three-county area at that time.
He
collapsed in on himself.
My career began to wane.
I had to find my voice.
In 1988, we were going to go to the show to laugh at him because he was this older comic, and Carlin came out with like a howitzer.
Now they're thinking about banning toy guns, and they're going to keep the fucking real one.
He didn't want to be that George Carlin anymore. He wanted to be a different George Carlin.
What I really was a rebel.
Can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right?
Stand-up's the hardest thing. And he did the hardest thing for the longest time.
He was challenging society to be better.
Life is sacred? Who said so? God? Hey, if you read history, you realize that God is one of the leading causes of death.
George is still relevant. He changed comedy 3 or 4 times, and he's still talking to us.
Things that he was getting at were so profound to the culture.
What would you do if you were the planet trying to defend against this pesky species? Viruses.
They try to divide people so that they can run off with all the fucking money.
Bullshit is the glue that binds us as a nation. It's the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Wow. George Carlin's American Dream, again, it premieres this Friday and Saturday. It's a two-parter on HBO and HBO Max. Kelly Carlin is with us. I'm so excited about this. You know, I first found out about it when you tweeted the trailer. It's like, oh, my God, what is this? Then, of course, I messaged you. It's like, okay, so what's your involvement with it? And I was thrilled to see that, yes, you are hands-on. You know, we already learned about your dad from you with your book, A Carlin Home Companion, which I adored. And then you did a show, a one-woman show, which was great. And, you know, it's how I got to know you. And now this, is it uplifting and sad at the same time working on something like this? How does it make you feel going through his work to compile this?
Great, great question, Nicole. You know, I was not the day-to-day person on this. Really, this is Judd and Mike Bonfiglio's story and their baby. What is always difficult with this is that, yes, the scab of grief gets itched again. Mm-hmm. And so then here he is now. And now I'm thinking about my childhood again. And now I'm looking at pictures of my parents. And now I'm discovering footage that I've never seen before that, you know, Mike and Judd are showing me. But I'm also discovering other things. I found my parents' love letters that I had never even known that I had. My dad gave them to me 25 years ago. And it's been a little bit of both, but you know, whenever you turn back towards your life and towards, you know, the complications of a life, all the emotions, all the feels get stirred up.
Sure. But that's what you deal with, you know, in your regular world, your day job, as it were, is in not traditional therapy, but therapy. It's working with people on getting in touch with your emotions. If I'm describing it wrong, please correct me.
No, absolutely. And you know, and part of our history, our personal history, is always a part of what makes us who we are and is the foundation for the stories we live into. And so, you know, there's always an updating of our story that's going on. And certainly my writing my own book, doing my solo show, was me trying to make sense of my life and make sense of my story. And now putting this out, you know, this is more than my dad's autobiography, Last Words. This is more than my memoir, A Carlin Home Companion. This is, you know, a vision of my dad's life and our life as the Carlins, because it very much is about the Carlins also, that, you know, other eyes and hands have been on and have looked at the full spectrum of and the totality of it all. And so I'm extremely proud about what they've done. They've done an incredible job with it. It brings up emotion to talk about. It brings up emotion to watch. It was really hard for me to watch the first rough cut they sent to me. I told them, I said, it's going to be a while. And then I watched the first 5 minutes and I was like, okay, this is amazing. Really excited. And then I would watch in like little chunks. And then it took me a while to kind of process that. And then a few days went by. I'm like, okay, I think I'm ready for part two.
So there's you, obviously. He was your dad. You know him differently than anybody else. But then there's us. And, you know, I grew up with George Carlin. I grew up, the seven dirty words, I could recite them just as easily as they all could. And I could from a very young age. It's part of our shared experience. George Carlin was that to my generation, your generation. We're about the same age. We grew up with him. And so the people have an ownership. Oh, he was my guy. And you think of him, at least I do, when something big happens, like the Supreme Court the other day, hearing what they're going to do on Roe v. Wade, and it's just horrible. And you know what? There's a George Carlin bit for that. And sure enough, it's making its way around the internet. I played it the other day. I get, you probably get a couple of cents from me because I get a copyright, not a strike. And I thank you for not giving me a copyright strike, but you do a content ID. So any revenue I get, you'll get, which is fine. I'm happy to pay for it. I wish I could just do it legitimately, but that's a YouTube thing. But he was so prescient. That's the thing that people keep saying, my God, he called this. He knew it. He was so ahead of his time. And do you see that more and more as you go through this footage?
Well, yeah, I think this was part of the reason that it was one of the first things Judd said to us when we talked to him about possibly doing this project is, you know, he's trending all the time. Like he's always on the internet and his stuff is completely relevant. It has not dated it at all. There's a few moments and a few things where, you know, he updated language around it or something like that, or, you know, would probably not talk about these days, something he did 50, 40 years ago. But 99% of it, it's completely relevant. And part of, I think that is because he was very much paying attention always about what was going
on.
And we can, and you know, and as citizens or whatever, our job is to pay attention the best we can, but we also have everything else on our plate going on. But that was his professional job, was to sit around and watch the culture and point things out. He's a professional observer. So, you know, he saw a lot of it and he was fearless. He was fearless in talking about what he saw and finding a way to talk about it that really landed on our lap so that we would have to pay attention while he was saying. And at the same time, you know, life is distracting and, you know, It is what it is, right? You know, gee, if we'd all paid attention, right? But of course, we'd all paid attention, you know, 60 years ago about the, you know, the destruction of the planet. That would have been nice too.
Yeah, well, and we sort of did. I mean, I remember we'd celebrate Earth Day. We'd say, hey, turn off lights, you know, drive.
Yeah, no, but that's his point always. Right, I mean, the whole planet is fine point is like, yeah, you can sort your recycling, but it ain't going to help. We're going away, people. You know, this is too big of a thing. This is, you know, we're not quite smart enough to handle what we're doing here, you know, and our greed will always win out. I mean, that was really the point of that, was that baby boomers had turned into yuppies and that the people who were celebrating Earth Day are suddenly now, you know, overusing everything. Right. So, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you listen to him. And whatever the monologue is, whatever the bit is, it's common sense. But he's the one who put it all together to say, wait a minute, this and that, it sounds like a no-brainer to us, but George Carlin's the one who thought that and put it into words and made us go, holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was his genius. His genius was being able to observe, being able to find a way in with an angle that would make people sit up, whether it was language or humor. It always was language and humor, the rhythm of the moment, how he built a piece. I mean, he was an orator. He was a monologist. He was an artist at this particular art form, which is persuasive speech. On top of that, he was funny. He was goofy. He was a physical comic. You know, he had so many gifts that he could layer all of those things on to bring us to where he wanted us to meet him.
Right. And he did it beautifully. I mean, we feel like we know him. Obviously, you know, we don't. There's the private side that you see, which you have shared with us again in the book and the show, and just in conversation. When you decided to do this and say your first time you met with Judd Apatow, was there anything you said that you want people to understand about your dad when they're done watching it?
Yeah, I wanted them to see him as a fully rounded human, that he was a man, he was a husband, a son, a father, an artist, always looking for his voice and his path forward, a brother. You know, he was all of these things, and he was not perfect. He had his own you know, monkeys on his own back. Mm-hmm. He struggled with his own addiction. He struggled with my mother's addiction. We all did in the household, you know, and he struggled with doubt and, you know, at times. And I wanted the, you know, as you know, Nicole, that's my gig. My gig is take the mask off and let's all remember that we're all humans here. We're all doing the best we can. You know, there's no manual, there's no instruction book for this stuff. We're just trying to figure it out. And I think the most beautiful thing that's revealed in this documentary is that he was a man who had dark moments, had confusions, had all of that. But he was also someone who really figured out his values very clearly in his life and knew who he was very early on around those values, and really stood up for them in his work every single day.
And it came through. I mean, I think his work, more than, you know, all comedians are different. They all take their cues from a different part of their innards, I guess, and that's why they're all unique. But I think what was so appealing about him was that it was always things we could relate to. He would pick up on that issue or that thing. And it's like, yeah, I always knew that was there, but I never quite observed it in that manner.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He had so many different phases, which we, you know, the documentary really covers really well, all the different phases and decades of his life and career. But he, in the, you know, really his job was chief observer. Mm-hmm. You know, he observed life. He observed his own personal life and the little moments he would talk about that we shared. You know, I don't know, however many other people listening to this today know the bit where he talks about, you know, when you go into the loaf of bread, you always go past two or three pieces. You leave the front ones for your family, but you always dig in and get the fresh ones. I do it every day. Yep. And every time I do it, I think of my dad,
right?
You know, because those are these little moments, and he was such a capturer of those little moments. And then he also had this bigger view where he would watch the culture, you know, and it started off very early, even with Burns and Carlin in 1960, 61, where they were doing commentary about the media. They were doing a lot of advertising bits. They were already saying to the culture, you know, these people are playing you, and we're observing this thing going on, and you know it's going on, and we know it's, but nobody ever talks about that it's going on. Mm-hmm. But they were doing it in a very subtle way. It was always very cute and funny and all that kind of stuff, but there was always this thread of social commentary underneath all of it, all the time. And so these two big bits, the personal life and the social life, the life we all share as citizens and humans on this earth, he was fascinated about how it's constructed. What are we saying about it? What are we pretending not to see? You know, that's, I think, a big thing. And it's so interesting because, you know, my love of depth psychology and the shadow and all of that. I mean, I'm always asking for myself and clients in the world, what are we pretending not to see? Mm. What is actually influencing us over here? And I really do feel like my dad and I both inherited that real inquisitiveness about, you know, what are we not talking about, but the thing that's actually in the room here with all of us.
Oh, yeah. I can see that. And I'll tell you something. There are days that I think I would love to hear George Carlin's take on this. I would have loved to hear him on Trump as president, because there's a whole thing going on there.
All you need to do is, you know, go back to the Owners of America, that bit.
Mm-hmm. The Owners of America, and they don't care about you.
Right. There is a club and we're not in it. Yep, but the reality is, you look, you know, he would throw it out here and there. He never went directly at them, but he always had a real thick, thick attitude of disdain for any white male in power in this country. There's this white male perspective. And it was always interesting to me, because it's like, well, but you're a white male, Dad. Like, how do you feel about that? I would have loved to have asked him that question. You know, what it's like, what is it like for you to know that kind of your slot in society is doing such harm? And I think part of what drove him to point these things out is because there was a part of him that, like, probably felt complicit. He knew he had privilege from day one. He understood privilege when no one even called it that back then.
Right.
You know, I mean, he very early on in my life, 7, 8, 9 years old, telling me about how, you know, the white people have, you know, oppressed the brown person and the black person in this country from day zero, you know? So he very much had that perspective. So if you pay attention to what he actually said about power, white males, wealth, the underdog, the oppressed, who's got the real power, who doesn't, you know exactly where he would stand on Donald Trump.
The other thing that I think he would go off on is the what I refer to as opposite world nature of things. The lies, that just the mendacity that's part of everyday life now. The fact these damn Supreme Court justices lied during their confirmation hearings. It's like acceptable to lie now. Projection too, because I'm rubber, you're glue kind of thing. Right?
Well, I have a very probably pretty strong feeling that his take would be, really? You're surprised?
Right.
They've been lying since day one. Mm. Why would you be surprised now?
Yeah.
Why, you know, and just the way, you know, I think the 80s really affected my dad. I mean, obviously every decade does, but I really think, you know, that Reagan era really saw the beginning of all of this in the Reagan era.
Without a doubt.
I mean, this is where it all began and really where the real foundation of this movement began. And I mean, it's obviously splintered in its own little ways, but this has all been the writing on the wall for a long time. And I really think my dad would come out and be like, you know, don't tell me you're surprised. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, the reason, part of the reason the documentary is called George Carlin's American Dream is A, he did live the American dream. But B, you know, that great line that he talks about, you know, that you have to be asleep to believe in it. Here we are. And now there's no secrets. Now all of the underbelly and shadow of this country is all, you know, right in the center of all of us. And here it is right on the stage. And this could be a really, really good thing for this country, because in order for a human being to heal, they have to own their shit.
Right.
They have to look at every part of them that is ugly, that is horrific, that is not generative, and they need to learn to be with it in a different way. And I really do believe that this is what's happening on this planet, that if we're going to make it as a species, this is an act, a psychological act that we have to do, which is look at the dark nature of humanity and the way human beings treat each other.
Well, there's a lot of it out there right now. This is a very, very dark time. I want to end on something that, it seems dark, but it's maybe not so much. It seems to me that the comedy community is very supportive and very close-knit, and I could be getting it all wrong, because I'm sure it's like any other community, creative or not, where there's backstabbing and there's ugliness. But not too long ago, Gilbert Gottfried died. I know his wife. I knew Dara before she and Gilbert got married. I knew her during the time they were dating for 10 years. When I adopted my daughter, you know, she's like, oh, I want one so badly. And I have pictures of her holding Allison as a, you know, a little baby and talking about how he just doesn't want kids. And I found a message from her after her daughter was born. And she's like, Lily is now 4 months old. He finally gave in and he loves her. And it's like the best thing ever. And, you know, but I actually watched the memorial service because it's online. And the love, I mean, from other comedians, from the community, the outpouring that I've seen around them, it seems like the community comes together as it did when Bob Saget died. And you know, I'm just wondering if your dad was part of that, if he was friendly with with these other comedians, or if he was in a different time.
I didn't know much about that part of my dad's life, but after he died, I certainly found out that, you know, he would reach out to comics. There were certain comics he talked to, certain people he supported and mentored along the way. He had a great respect for a lot of those guys, a lot of the ones that just have recently gone, yeah. You know? So, you know, he wasn't a guy who hung out with people. He was very much a loner. He was more of a writer kind of a personality. But he had an easy laugh and, you know, you could make him laugh pretty easily. And he loved obviously daring, intelligent comedy. And, yeah, you know, he went to his fair share of memorials too.
Sure. I'm sure. Was there anybody that he idolized? Any like comedian or philosopher or person that he looked up to especially?
Well, obviously Lenny Bruce was a big influence on my father. Lord Buckley was another one who was a big influence on my dad, and he knew the family. He respected a lot of great thinkers and things like that, you know, Hitchens and Dawkins and people like that, even though he was more agnostic than a full on kind of a hardcore atheist, right. Although, you know, he didn't believe in the God that the church certainly handed to him. But he was fascinated in quantum physics and all sorts of things, Noam Chomsky and Kurt Vonnegut and, just great, great thinkers.
Awesome. So the special, is there anything in it that surprised you?
Yeah, there's a lot of audio that I'd never heard. And there was some footage about some things that I'd never seen. And it was really great to just hear my dad talk in his own voice. There's a lot of audio they found. I love that it's not a talking head type of documentary. There's a few moments, but it's only really to make a comment or to shift the conversation or in some way. It's not overused. Mostly you're hearing my dad's story from his own voice.
Wow.
They did an incredible job of putting this material together. And so there's just moments where my dad's talking in this audio where he's, you know, I just stuff I never talked to him about that I love getting to hear and see and really hear him working out some things and thinking about some things in his own way and talking about his personal approach to his work and stuff. It's really cool.
I can't wait. You know, I thought I was going to hopefully get a screener to see before we spoke, but it didn't show up. And it's like, that's just fine because we can talk and then I can watch it this weekend with everyone else. So it is George Carlin's American Dream. It premieres Friday on HBO, part one, part two on Saturday. David thanks you because Friday is his birthday. So he said, thank you for the lovely gift. He's excited. Awesome. We know what we're doing for his birthday. And really, there's nothing we'd rather do. We're excited. So Kelly Carlin, it's always great to see you. And I love that you did this. One last question. How old were you when you lost your dad?
Oh, I was 45. Okay. Just turned 45.
Wow. So you had him for a good part of your life. And I'm asking for good reason. You know, Mother's Day was just this weekend. I lost my mom at 19. And, you know, but I also lost my dad at, I don't even know how old I was, but it was in 2004. So it was, you know, fairly recently.
Yeah, I lost my mom 25 years ago. So I was 34 when I lost my mom and then 45 when I lost my dad. So,
you know,
yeah.
And it hits us. It's whatever time in our life it hits us, but it stays with you. And it's like that, snapshot in time that you don't ever move on from. And you think about things that happened after I lost my mom, after you lost your dad. And it's just the world goes on, but you're kind of stuck there with them at that moment. I'm just, I don't know that there's a question there, but it's just that, you know, thinking about all the time since then and what, how he would react or how you would react. And I know he'd be very proud of you. Just look at you.
I think he would. You know, I still have conversations with him and my mom all the time. That's so great. I really believe that the ancestors are with us and that they are here to guide and to walk with us. And I can hear his voice clearly speaking to me and my mom also. And so I hang out with them often. And when I need some advice or need a gut check, I check in with them because they're there and they look me right in the eye and they tell me, go for it. You know what you're doing, Kelly, go for it. So
I love it. A kiddo.
And your kiddo.
He did call you kiddo,
exactly.
Right?
I
remember that from the book. So I hear it. I can hear him say it to you. Kelly Carlin, thank you so much. Thank you for putting this out there because I think, you know what, right now, we could all use some George Carlin. So this will hopefully introduce him, you know, to my kid who I try to tell her about him. And it doesn't work. So maybe if she sits down and watches this, she'll understand who George Carlin was to me when I was her age and older. Thank you, Kelly. I can't wait. I'm excited. I'll message you afterwards and tell you what I thought about it.
Great.
And I know
I'll
love it.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you so much. It's great to see you. I appreciate your time as always.
Bye.
Kelly Carlin, she's the real deal. I got to tell you, that's just how she is. You know, we met through this show, actually. We met when she wrote the book, and she came on the show, and then she did her one-woman show that was really based on the book. A Carlin Home Companion is what it's called. You should read it, because if you're a George Carlin fan, you will love this. And it's another whole side of him that you learn about from his only child. Kelly's become a friend. She's just what you see, and she's awesome. So I'm really excited to see this. And as I said, yes, we could all use some George Carlin right about now. All right, we've only got like 4 minutes left, but Kelly mentioned one bit, the owners of America. And I'll get a copyright thing, but they won't suspend me for this. So I'm going to play it for you because this is George Carlin. I think it's a good way to end the show today. Tomorrow, Howie Klein will be here. We'll talk about what happened in the primary yesterday. But I think we should go out with some George Carlin, right? All right. Enjoy, because he belongs to all of us now.
Consumption. It's the new national pastime. Fuck baseball. It's consumption. The only true lasting American value that's left, buying things. People spending money they don't have on things they don't need. So they can max out their credit cards and spend the rest of their lives paying 18% interest on something that costs $12.50. And they didn't like it when they got it home anyway. Not too bright, folks. Not too fucking bright. But if you talk to one of them about this, if you isolate one of them, you sit them down rationally, and you talk to them about the low IQs and the dumb behavior and the bad decisions, right away they start talking about education. That's the big answer to everything. Education. They said we need more money for education. We need more books, more teachers, more classrooms, more schools. We need more testing for the kids. You say to them, well, you know, we've tried all of that, and the kids still can't pass the test. They say, don't you worry about that. We're going to lower the passing grades. And that's what they do in a lot of these schools now. They lower the passing grades so more kids can pass. More kids pass, the school looks good, everybody's happy, the IQ of the country slips another 2 or 3 points, and pretty soon all you'll need to get into college is a fucking pencil. Got a pencil? Get the fuck in there. It's physics. Then everyone wonders why 17 other countries graduate more scientists than we do. Education! Politicians know that word. They use it on you. Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things: the flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start? Left behind? Someone's losing fucking ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money.
Oh, yeah.
They want your fucking retirement money.
Yep.
They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street.
You know something?
They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club.
And you ain't in it. You ain't in it.
You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them.
Yep.
They don't give a fuck about
they
you.
Don't
they
give
don't give a fuck about you.
You.
They don't care
Hello.
About you at all.
They
at
don't
all.
Care about
at
you.
All.
Yep.
You know?
And there's George Carlin. There's a little bit of George Carlin for you. Again, Friday night, Saturday night, HBO and HBO Max. I think they have free trials, so you can get in there, get it, watch the Carlin thing, and then cancel it. HBO Max, by the way, is for the streaming. It's for people who don't have cable, who cut the cord, who want, you know, HBO. All right, so there's that. I can't wait. And yes, thank you, George. Because we needed that today. I needed that today. I need that all the time. All right. Until tomorrow, everybody, we'll leave you with the news. Thanks for listening. Thank you, George. See you Friday. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
First thought on the Wednesday morning after the first big Tuesday primary of the 2022 midterm elections, let's go progressives. It was a pretty good night for the good guys. Let's start in Pennsylvania, where current Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman easily beat centrist Connor Lamb to take the Democratic nomination for the Senate seat being vacated by the retiring Pat Toomey. Fetterman, now recovering from a minor stroke last week, got 59% of the vote to Lamb's 26%, winning every county in the state along the way. The question now is who Fetterman will face in November. The race on the Republican side is still too close to call. With 94% of the vote in, Mehmet Oz has 31.3% to Dave McCormick's 31.1%. Pennsylvania has an automatic recount if the margin is in with half a percentage point. By the way, Kathy Barnett, the ultra-right-wing spoiler that everyone expected, came in a distant third with 24.8% of the vote. In the Pennsylvania governor's race, a Donald Trump sycophant, far-right election denier, January 6th participant, Doug Mastriano, won, pitting him against the Democrat, Josh Shapiro, who ran unopposed in the primary. The common wisdom saying Mastriano is way too far down the rabbit hole to win in a general election.
We'll see. And before we leave Pennsylvania, we must celebrate progressive state representative Summer Lee. She ran in the House Democratic primary for District 12 against a corporate, deep-pocketed attorney named Steve Irwin. Despite almost $3.4 million spent against her by AIPAC-aligned groups, with 95% of the votes in, she's in the lead. It's tight, only 450 votes separating them, but this is a major historic victory. Another big progressive win came in Oregon's 5th District, where Jamie McLeod Skinner handily defeated the incumbent Democrat obstructionist Kurt Schrader. You know, the guy who's been called the Joe Manchin of the House. With only about 61% of the vote counted, she's beating him 61 to 39%. Still not convinced about Schrader? Well, he cast a key vote to block the Democrats' promised drug pricing legislation and worked to water down the measure. That was before he played a pivotal role helping Republicans kill Joe Biden's Build Back Better bill. Yet for some reason, Biden still endorsed him and insisted, quote, when it has mattered most, Kurt has been there for me. Really?
Come on, man.
That's why we can't have nice things. Anyway, a super PAC controlled by a big pharma front group spent over $1 million to boost Strader, who also benefited by $800,000 in spending by a pro-Israel PAC called Mainstream Democrats PAC. But wait, it gets even better. A big and very welcome story is emerging one district over in Oregon's 6th, where we heard horror stories about a crypto billionaire's attempt to buy the election. Despite the Protect Our Future PAC and the House Majority PAC, a group that's led by Hillary Clinton's former campaign manager, Robbie Mook, they spent a combined $13 million in one Oregon primary race. However, State Representative Andrea Salinas appears to have beaten Carrick Flynn, the candidate who all of those PAC dollars were pushing. And it was a big one. With 77% of the vote in, the margin is a whopping 38 to 19%. Oh, and a quick update from North Carolina, where Madison Cawthorn was eaten by his own, well, defeated in his primary by State Senator Chuck Edwards. How's that Donald Trump endorsement working for you, Cawthorn? You don't have to answer. Hey, here's a story for those of us who've been asking where Merrick Garland is. You know, the attorney general who appears to be doing not enough to hold accountable those responsible for the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Well, we now know that the Department of Justice has asked for transcripts of all the interviews conducted by the House Select Committee. A former U.S. attorney, Barbara McQuaid, said that this shows that the Justice Department has widened the scope of its criminal investigation. Meanwhile, the committee's chair, Benny Thompson of Mississippi, hasn't finalized an agreement with the Justice Department on what material to hand over and when. The DOJ told the committee in April that some of the interviews, quote, may contain information relevant to a criminal investigation we are conducting. Ooh. Meanwhile, according to a new report from the Washington Post, election denial activists met with a senior Trump appointee at the State Department on January 6th. This shows that the insurrectionists had access to high-level government officials. Stay tuned. Some good news for a change. The U.S. women's national soccer team, which has for years been far more successful than their male counterparts, has long pushed for equal pay. Well, the new pay scale was announced Wednesday morning, and guess what? Both salaries and bonuses have now been equalized, providing a substantial boost to the decorated women's team. Hell yeah. The FDA on Tuesday authorized giving the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccination booster to children aged 5 to 11. Those kids will be eligible for the third dose of the vaccine at least 5 months after they receive the second dose. And that's important because we've now passed that milestone. More than 1 million people have now died of COVID-19 in the U.S. since the pandemic start. Experts believe that the true toll of the disease is even higher. About three quarters of all COVID-19 deaths have been among seniors, according to CDC data. Last week, President Biden issued a proclamation marking 1 million deaths and ordered the American flag to fly at half staff, writing, that the nation, quote, must not grow numb to each sorrow. And yesterday, the White House also announced U.S. households are now able to order an additional 8 free at-home COVID-19 tests. Just go to covidtests.gov to fill out the form. And finally, they're here. 2 military officials testifying Tuesday at a congressional hearing on UFOs that they had now had about 400 reports of sightings that they can't explain. The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence held its first public hearing on UFOs since 1968. That was followed by a closed session where technical details of sightings could be discussed without breaking military secrecy rules. And as of this week, the Pentagon's new Airborne Object Identification and Management Synchronization Group has an official pick to run the office investigating the incidents. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.